The following program is a production of KHNS. Its content does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the Board of Directors and staff of Lynn Cannell Broadcasting Incorporated, the licensee.
Support for Talk Around Town is brought to you in part by the Greater Haines Chamber of Commerce, a membership organization promoting sustainable economic growth and community development through advocacy, facilitation, and education. Learn more about the Chamber at haineschamber.org. And by Alaska Arts Confluence, supporting creative placemaking with Art on Main Street and the Fort Seward Sculpture Garden. More information at alaskaartsconfluence.org.
Welcome to Talk Around Town, the program that aims to look at local issues in context. I'm Deborah Schnabel, program host. With me today, KHNS News Director Margaret Friedenauer. This program is the last in an indeterminate while. Margaret is vacating her position, and until KHNS has a news director in place, Talk Around Town is planning on taking a break. But we do have a program today. It's a free format, and we'll take a look at the cruise ship moorage waiver proposal in Haines and delve more deeply into civility. Stay tuned. And a good morning to you, Margaret.
Good morning, Deborah.
Okay. Talk Around Town has featured the perspective of newspaper publisher Tom Morfitt in this section of Talk Around Town that we can review for years. But Tom is not here because he has an issue with KHNS's online publication of written news as it happens. We believe that you should be informed of this. Tom has declined to participate on Talk Around Town until, and these are his words, KHNS acknowledges the issue. Tom believes that because KHNS is publicly funded by publishing written stories accessible to the public for free on the internet, KHNS is unfairly engaging in the marketplace where he has to go for his livelihood. I think that some people, including Tom, see this as an issue that's resolvable, and that would be by KHNS holding internet publication back to a time specific, or for maybe charging for access to your written news stories on the website. Margaret, as the news director, could you just tell us what KHNS is doing and why it seems to be holding fast to its position that the internet is fair game for public broadcast licensees and private newspaper publishers alike?
Okay. Well, we have talked to Tom about this for the last several weeks and during two board meetings and several other meetings. But I mean, first of all, the court...
What is it that you're doing?
What we are doing is for about a year, we've had a new website in which I publish our written stories. You know, every story starts with the written word, whether you're on TV or on the radio, because you have to type out your story and then read it and script it. So like most other stations, radio stations, public radio stations, we post those written stories online now. And we also post the audio versions of them online so that people can go to the website to read them if they miss a newscast or miss part of the story. And, yeah, that's what we do.
Okay. And because it can be printed out, Tom
Yes.
represents that the publication on the internet is in competition with his written publication.
Right.
And he requires... to be in the marketplace for selling of advertising, which you don't need to do.
Correct.
Okay.
That's how I understand
All right.
his position.
All right. So yeah. I just wanted to get that out there because I've enjoyed for many years having Tom on the show with me, and he's not here. But we're going to be taking a break, and who knows how it's going to end up when we come back on. So
yeah,
thank you
I'd just
that.
Like to say anybody who wants to hear our, you know, why we do it and why this discussion is ongoing or KHNS's stance on it can definitely give us a call.
Okay, so what else has been going on this week in the news, Margaret?
Well, Well, I think the big one is the state budget or lack thereof and how that affects us locally or might affect us locally. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is affecting us locally because of, I think, the uncertainty of what it means to not have a state operating budget in place. Though it was interesting on Monday. So what happened Monday is, as most people probably know, the legislature is supposed to be meeting in this special session in Anchorage. The House struck a deal on a budget, but then it had to go to the Senate, and the Senate declined to accept that deal. The state Senate decided, no, we don't like the deal that the House Democrats and Republicans hashed out. We need some different stuff. So then it kind of, people are saying, well, then it's kind of back to square one. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean for the state? So Monday, Governor Walker had this press conference in Anchorage, and it was kind of interesting because if you were a news person, all of a sudden we got flooded, and our email boxes got flooded with press releases from just about every state agency, all within about a 2-hour span of time.
And it was, they're acting on it.
Yeah. I mean, it was obvious that that the governor had directed the state agencies to come out with exactly what's going to happen if we have to shut down July 1st because if there's no budget. So it was somewhat orchestrated, but also very illustrative of what state agencies are saying might happen. And, of course, the big one was ferries are going to stop running. Every single ferry in the Marine Highway system is going to stop running if there's no budget.
If there's no budget. And that's interesting because ferries spoke. I have a press release that came out from the DOT. Ferry spokesman Jeremy Woodrow says that the 11 ships in the fleet will head to their home ports as close to July 1 as possible.
Yes.
And one of the things that was brought up by the executive director of the Southeast Alaska State Fair is that should this actually happen, the Southeast Alaska State Fair, among other things, I mean, we can talk generically about things around town, just people coming and going. But when you have economic events, events with economic impact in the community that depend on ferry traffic, you're in for a world of hurt if they're not able to get here. So that was a very important, you know, aspect of it, to consider those things. And again, I suppose, would you say possibly that the agencies are would like to hear from the public? I mean, how would you?
Well, I think
now we're getting into advocacy.
I love
what do you do?
I mean, putting on my advocacy journalism hat, I don't think it's the state agencies, it's the legislators that, I mean, the state agencies can't change.
No, but they can stir up the public response.
Sure, they can stir up the public response. I mean, in a way, they're given a fixed budget, right? They're given this fixed amount of money to work with, and the department decides what to do with that fixed amount of money. So technically, I suppose they could hear from the public that, oh, no, you need to stop road maintenance, or we'd rather you stop operating the airports than shut down the ferry. But, I you know, it's still a matter of they need a budget. They need their money. They need access to their money to do all of their operations.
The irony of all of this, of course, is that we still have the same amount of money that whether we have a budget or not.
Right.
And so really it's just saying we want a spending plan, and to shut the whole state down because you don't have a spending plan has always seemed somewhat unreasonable to me.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we've got millions of dollars sitting around in
and there's
accounts everywhere.
It's just that disagreement of where are we going to take the money from? How are we going to spend it? I mean, the other big
and then
one,
you change the budget anyway. I mean, how many times a year does even the municipality say amend the budget?
Amend the budget. And then, I mean, the other big one for locally is the fisheries. How would commercial fisheries be affected? Because, I mean, the gillnet fishery up here in Lynn Canal starts, I think it's June 21st. It's Father's Day. And if the government were to shut down, it would only be a week and a half later. And so, well, what does that mean? Is there going to be enough enforcement? Are people, you know, is there going to be any enforcement?
You mean people can't go fishing if there are no agents out there from fishing?
Well, so, I mean, I talked to the commercial fisheries people. Yeah. We did this story. And basically, the director of commercial fisheries for the state says what you're probably going to see, we aren't going to be able to do as many surveys. We aren't going to be able to do as much fish counting. All that data that we rely on to manage the fisheries is going to be harder to collect, process, and get. So what does that mean? Well, that means if we don't have all the data, we're going to conserve. We're going to manage very conservatively because mm-hmm. we have to manage for the fish. And everybody can argue about fish management mm-hmm. policy all they want. But basically, they're going to have to be very conservative if they don't have all that data coming in. So they are planning on allowing commercial fisheries to continue. But without all the data they would be getting from mm-hmm. people who may be laid off and all the fish, all the technicians, they don't – I mean, how do you know if there's enough fish coming up? And mm-hmm. so that could mm-hmm. greatly restrict. Mm-hmm. And again, this is all just – it's still all 3 weeks away, which according to former legislator Bill Thomas, who's also a fisherman, he's like, that's a long time. They'll get a budget passed. I don't care. You know, but it's still – you have to start mm-hmm. thinking about it and talking about right. it. So.
Okay. And locally mm-hmm. this week, what's the big topic?
Well, our community and economic development director.
I know people
resigned.
Are waiting for you. What's Mark? What's Deborah and Margaret thinking? It's not about the state budget.
Something's
okay. And yes, we are going to get to that. In fact,
that.
We might as well take our little break.
Okay,
and we'll move into the talking topic and discuss what's going on with community and economic development.
Sounds great.
About a month ago, Community and Economic Development Director Bill Mandeville prepared a position paper that was at the request of the Tourism Advisory Board, who wanted to expand the program that was initiated by the borough to offer free moorage to first-time visiting cruise ships. And they wanted to expand that to all cruise ships that agreed to come to our port. KHNS has tried unsuccessfully for a month. In fact, it's the main reason why we didn't have a talk around town on
two
the
weeks
schedule
ago,
two
right,
weeks
I know.
Ago to have a Tourism Advisory Board member or a borough staff member on Talk Around Town to discuss this proposal. And, well, we were unsuccessful.
We were. It was
we
kind
were.
Of
and now
depressing.
We're most assuredly unsuccessful due to the recent resignation of Bill Mandeville.
Yes.
So we need to just acknowledge
yes.
that that's going on. You want to make happened. That sideline sidebar report?
I can make that sidebar report. Okay. So yesterday we were notified. Actually, it started Tuesday when our reporter Emily was going in to talk to Bill. She had an appointment to talk to Bill Tuesday about Mosquito Lake, his work that he's been doing with the Friends of Mosquito Lake. And she showed up and he was unavailable. And we didn't have any idea. We weren't really given much information about when he would be back or whatnot. And then Wednesday morning we were notified. Dave Sosa, the manager, sent out a public announcement that Bill Mandeville had resigned. So, and there a little more information came out yesterday about all that, but essentially, effective immediately, he is no longer, we do not have a community and economic development director in the position.
But we do have a joint Commerce Committee and Tourism Advisory Board meeting scheduled for tonight at 6:30.
We do.
And with a topic being this proposal to waive cruise ship fees.
Yes.
And that there should be comment for the public at that meeting.
Yes.
It's at 6:30 tonight. So, Margaret and I decided that for those of us who haven't dug into the documents on the borough's website, we'll take this opportunity to discuss aspects of the proposal and get you thinking about it. And we will take calls today, 766-2020, and you have to have extension 1.
Yes,
if you want to call in,
one.
If you have an opinion, if you'd like to have questions, we'll find an answer for you. So let's just start in this proposal to have to either reduce or waive mortgage fees for cruise ships is really not a brand new idea.
No.
It's been around for a while, and in fact, we've even experienced it already.
Right,
so
the program through Backwoods Alaska, that
right.
program, yeah.
So a couple of years ago, it was decided that in 2015, we would offer to new cruise ships a free dockage if they would come.
Right.
And so that was successful in getting two ships. And we should point out that these are just one-time dockings. They aren't recurring scheduled visitations, which I believe TAB, the Tourism Advisory Board, the main goal would be to get cruise ships coming in on a regular basis like we have right now with Norwegian.
And that's what Leslie Ross, the tourism director, has said at these recent meetings. Is she's like, it's great that we had the Infinity come this season. Like we saw the Infinity mm-hmm. here Tuesday mm-hmm. in Haines. She's like, but I would love to, I want to see a ship that would commit to coming mm-hmm. several times a year to give us a more reliability and mm-hmm. a more, mm-hmm. yeah. So mm-hmm.
so that's the point of it. So what then the Tourism Advisory Committee, our board, has been working on a proposal for mm-hmm. the year, and they came out with a proposal. Could you give us just what are the basic tenets of that?
The basic tenets. So there's basically, I think, two or three options that they've narrowed it down to. They started with several options, and over the course of the year, the board and the borough come, and they kind of looked at the feasibility of these and came down to, I think, two or three options. One is half of a waiver, 50% waiver for a docking fee of all ships. And then there would be a 3-year graduate waiver to all ships who return to Haines. So saying, instead of just getting a ship saying, okay, we'll try you out next year, if you commit to 3 years, you would get a certain percentage waived the first year, a little more the second, and a little more the third year of mm-hmm. your docking fee. Mm-hmm. And I think those are the two main and then there's also the idea, well, we could take another combination of those two somehow mm-hmm. if the assembly wants to go mm-hmm. that way. But those are the two
that have been proposed.
And
I think that it's one of the things that has been somewhat critical of mm-hmm. The TAB is that there could be other kinds of options. For example, one that came forward to me independently was, how about doing it in reverse? Like, don't give them free the first time around, but go ahead and charge the moorage fees that we have on schedule, which is like $3,000 every time
right.
you dock. But if you come back next year, you pay less. And if you come back next year, you pay even less.
Right.
In other words, it would be more of an incentive program that grows as time passes,
right.
as opposed to it getting increasingly more restrictive
mm-hmm.
as time passes.
Mm-hmm.
So that was an interesting option, I thought,
option, yeah.
that was put forward. So, but that's what's before the assembly right now.
We should
also speak to this too. The Tourism Advisory Committee, when it was introduced on May 12th,
uh-huh.
I think. Mr. Mandeville did present with the proposal a schedule for public participation and committee reports and public hearings and the development of an ordinance. Because right now we don't have an ordinance. These
right.
are just ideas. And I think we need to be sure that we all know these are just ideas that are being floated out there for the public to react to.
And the tonight's meeting is a committee meeting, which is a little looser than an assembly.
Mm-hmm.
Usually the committee
mm-hmm.
chairman is, like George, is open to a little more dialogue and answer
right.
and question and answer. And they're supposed to develop which of these options or what option, if at all, they want
if
to bring
all.
To the assembly.
Right.
Yeah.
So the assembly, though, got fast-tracked. Did not take staff's advice and moved this forward so that the June 4th meeting is happening. And I believe that they would like to see a proposal before the assembly much earlier, like in July, right?
And that was because, from what Leslie Ross said, the tourism director, that she goes to cruise ships in July and August. And, I mean, cruise ships set their itineraries years out. So we're talking, I mean, the cruise ships are thinking now about 2017, 18, 19
mm-hmm.
right now.
Mm-hmm.
And when she goes to visit with them later this summer, those are the years they're going to be thinking about. So if she doesn't have this option to present to them, she says, you know, it's not going to affect the cruise ship itineraries to Haines until 2018 and 19.
Mm.
So they would like to get this approved sooner so she has that, what she, you know,
okay.
that tool in her pocket when she okay. has to go visit with them.
But, okay.
but they have been discussing it for a year.
Right.
I'd like to.
But we have to decide it now.
Yes.
Okay. So let's go ahead and we'll move forward on that. So the basic idea is that when offered free moorage,
mm-hmm.
a cruise ship will decide to come here. They have an increased incentive to come to Haines. And that would mean more people
yes.
coming to Haines who spend more money than would have been spent otherwise, because they wouldn't have been here at all.
Yes.
And those sales for tours in the grocery stores, in the bars, thrift shops, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
et cetera, will generate more revenue in the community.
Sales tax, yes.
Sales, correct.
Yes.
Sales tax revenue. So one of the questions that was asked, what is the risk? Many public members want to know. So what is the risk that we're taking? And I guess I would just like to repeat Sean Gaffney's response to that question. Sean is the president CEO of Shokat Guides.
Mm-hmm. And he's on the TAB.
And he's also on the Tourism Advisory Board. And his answer is, the only risk we are taking is that the ship would have come anyway.
And we wouldn't.
It would have come anyway without us offering the incentive. But that's the only risk that he sees that we take. I don't know.
It is an interesting. And so what he's saying is they would have paid the docking fee. They may have already come and paid the docking fee.
We gave it away for free.
However, when I did the story on this, I found it interesting. I did this research. We do have the lowest docking fee of any port in Southeast. Mm-hmm. So you could look at that two ways. Mm-hmm. The risk is very low because we're not losing that much in docking fees. Mm-hmm. It's about $3,000,
right,
roughly.
Right.
I mean, Juneau, Skagway, some of these places, Ketchikan, they're talking over $10,000 in docking fees that they get for a single ship. We have $3,000. Mm-hmm. So there is very little that, I mean, quote unquote, you're losing if they don't come. On the other hand, someone pointed out at the last committee meeting, we already have the lowest fee and we don't have more ships. So why would waiving a relatively low fee draw more here? That was one interesting concern or question I heard at the last committee meeting.
And so that brings it begs the question, why do cruise ships decide to go where they go?
That was my favorite question to try to answer when I did this story, because they won't talk to you about that.
Well, many people who have been studying cruise ships for many, many years say that, well, cruise ships make their money through the sale of shore excursions.
Right.
So what really matters to them is where they dock, how much money they can make off of the commissions that they charge on shore excursions. And I think that that's, I would say in my experience and in my observation over the years, that that's probably true.
Sure.
And that there have been people who, take the position that the only reason even the ships that dock here right now are here is because they can't get berthed in Skagway.
Right.
So I think that, and I don't have a documentation of this, but it's, I think my kind of, I've been told Skagway is one of the most lucrative ports in the world for cruise ships. And it's because of the White Pass Railroad
It's about the most popular tourist destination in the state. The White Pass.
The world?
I don't know about the world.
Okay.
But yeah, it's definitely, I think it was, and Klondike National Historic Park was the most visited site, tourist site last year in the state.
Oh, right. Well, look at how many. Yeah, more people come to Skagway than go to Denali, right?
But so the argument is, we don't have a White Pass Railroad.
Right. Well, and this was kind of proven out, and I'm sure there's people that are going to argue with me about this, but I was told that back in the good old days of cruise ship visitation in Haines, there was the Royal Caribbean. It was very interesting. It was an evening ship. It came in at 5 p.m. and it stayed till about 10 p.m. And as you can imagine, the Halsingland Hotel was a going concern for those 4 or 5 hours, as were most of the bars in town. And there were tours. And I mean, it was lively. When the White Pass decided to put on a 4 p.m. train departure in Skagway, that ship did not come back.
I see.
Now, I'm not saying that is a cause and effect.
No.
Because I don't know the facts of it. I'm just reporting that I had been told that, because it does make sense that a cruise ship will stay in a port where they can sell shore excursions and get the money off the commissions.
Well, and I think there's also the fact that a lot of these ports have company-owned stores, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, some people make fun of the company-owned stores and all of that, but that is a lucrative business for the companies and for the ships. Mm-hmm. And Haines, now here's, I think this is an interesting, Haines doesn't have any company-owned stores. On the other hand, the tourists and the cruise ship passengers that do come to Haines, a lot of them, you hear, they liked it here because it is more, quote-unquote, authentic.
Uh-huh.
There are none of those stores.
Right.
It's a little more authentic. However, even if the customer likes it more, it still comes down to what can a cruise ship make money on. Mm-hmm. They're a business, of course.
So there are some people that would say and have said what we really need to do is continue to build the activities and the attractions
and
that
capacity.
We have capacity here in Haines. And that's one of the issues that is brought up. So let's say we are able to attract another cruise ship into Haines. Let's say it comes on Tuesday as opposed to Wednesday. And then we are able to attract another that comes on a Friday. So now we have a Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday ship docking in Haines. And theoretically, and I want to quote this because it's very interesting, it's trickle-down economics is what we're talking about here. In the manager's report where this initiative was discussed, quote, the borough's intent is that these fee reductions, meaning the cruise ship moorage waivers,
right,
that these fee reductions trickle down to local tour operators who in turn use the savings to bolster and improve their tourism products.
Okay.
So I'm going to take the liberty of expanding that a little bit further, and hopefully there are more than tour operators that are going to, benefit from this.
Right.
But I mean, if in fact it is the purpose, the borough's intent to grow tours and the existing tours and expand on them, we have to, as a community, then recognize and acknowledge what's our carrying capacity in the community for tours.
Right.
Now, this is just a pet peeve of mine, but
okay,
but
Deborah.
But I
no,
mean,
no, I'm
I've been on
you.
The I've been on the Battery Point Trail for I don't know how many years, and it's taken us 6 to 10 years, and we still don't have that trail improved and even safe. And as more and more cruise ship passengers take tours on that trail and pound the dirt down, after a while you have to say, oh my God, you know, we are not taking care of the products that we're selling.
And you mean state or borough?
Well,
because this is what came up last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was interesting when they talked about a Chilkat Lake tour.
Chilkoot
Lake tour came up to the assembly. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's approve another one. But then all these concerns came out from tour operators themselves that
right.
there are already too much traffic, too many tours in the Chilkoot corridor. Well, then it comes back to the assembly, but it's a state park.
Right.
Who can help
right.
us? Are we supposed to manage it? Is the state? So we talk about capacity, and yet we still have a disagreement over who gets to manage the capacity,
right.
the borough
right.
or the state?
Well, it is the state, but they don't want to do it.
Exactly. So, I mean, there's a whole another level of what do you do?
Yeah, and the Commerce Committee did 2 years ago conduct many hearings with the tour operators and develop a kind of a gentleman's agreement, I guess, about how tours would be conducted and behavior and how, you know, people would keep from stepping all over each other, I guess, in that. But I think we also have to recognize that we're not necessarily piling more people on the same day into a tour. What we're doing, though, is we're...
Good point.
Right.
Good point.
You're adding, you know, where there's nothing happening on Tuesday, now there would be something on Tuesday.
Right.
And where there's nothing happening on Friday, now there'd be something on Friday.
So,
but you have to consider the wear and tear, I guess, might be.
So can I ask you
sure.
this question from a perspective, someone who's been in Haines longer than me? Do you think... And the few people I've talked to about this, and they've been few, I mean, they were actually not fully being here when maybe this controversy in the 90s with cruise ships in
mm-hmm.
Haines came
mm-hmm.
about.
Mm-hmm.
I was asking people about it. And some of the people who were involved in what happened in the 90s, you know, boycotting or picketing the Royal Caribbean, whatever, I thought they would be against this proposal. Say,
mm-hmm.
no, let's not. But surprisingly, a few of those people were like, no, that's not my concern. My
mm-hmm.
concern is maybe capacity or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or
mm-hmm.
they don't really have a concern with it.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I've had a couple people say, well, we can all agree that we would like to see more business, more visitors. And,
right.
I mean, growing a tour operation means more jobs in Haines, more financial security in Haines.
Right.
So I think there is a sort of agreement that people – I think it's the
uh-huh.
the way we draw the more visitors here. Is that what we're trying to decide with this, you think?
Exactly.
Okay.
This is an initiative to get more people to come to Haines. Now, it's interesting that you brought that up because the local Chamber of Commerce had a questionnaire go out 2 weeks ago.
And of which you are executive director.
Yes,
yeah.
I am the executive director, so I happen to know the information. but the mortgage fee waiver proposal
mm-hmm.
questionnaire went out, and we had 23 responses. I'm still trying to build this up
yes,
to get a much more...
you and everyone else is trying to build up public participation in
right,
this town.
Okay. But the first question was, do you want to see more cruise ships dock in Haines? Okay, 23 respondents. 21 people, yes.
Okay.
2 people, no.
No. Okay.
The second question, do you support the Tourism Advisory Board proposal to waive PC dock moorage fees for cruise ships as a strategy to attract more cruise ships to Haines? 12 said yes, and 11 said no. So I think it's a very interesting picture that we've got here. We also asked the question of, do you feel sufficiently informed on the cruise ship proposal to even have an opinion? Mm-hmm. And 18 of the 22 said yes, mm-hmm. that they felt they were sufficiently informed. So I would say that this is an informed response. The people who said, I don't think this is a good strategy, the 11 of them, which is 47% of them, feel that they're informed enough to say, to have an opinion. So I do think that it's questionable. So I'd like to talk a little bit about what, why would that be questionable for people?
Well, can I make a,
sure.
can I segue in
yeah.
here? And I'm not trying to tout my own work here, but when I did this story okay. on the cruise ship waiver, what I wanted to do was go outside the borough and understand. I was trying to find other people outside the borough that okay. might have an idea about this. From what I understood from the Alaska Cruise Association, we're the only community thinking about waiving fees. There are some ports globally that waive docking fees to draw
Where
more
are
cruise
they?
Ship. She couldn't tell me the name, but apparently it's worked in the Caribbean in a few places okay. and like that. But they had high dock fees. They waive them. They draw the cruise ship in I by see. Not paying $10,000, $20,000 in a mm-hmm. dock fee. Now, when I talk to the state economist from the university, she is the former – I liked her. She was Ginny Fay. Well, she used to be the Economic Development and Tourism Director for the Alaska Department of Commerce. She said, great idea. She's like, but there's a whole lot of other factors in play. She's like, you have to think about – she's like, what if – is there enough infrastructure? And we do have a new dock.
Yep.
It's a beautiful new dock, but it's only one. Right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And
but we only want one at a time.
We only want one. Yeah. Are there more shore excursion? Are there money making opportunities for the ships? She's like, and then there's the things that you cannot compete with. She's like, sorry, you're not Glacier Bay or Hoonah. She's like, those are the two big markets right now.
Or Skagway.
Or Skagway. But right now, Glacier Bay and being close to Glacier Bay, which we are, mm-hmm. but still. Glacier Bay and Hoonah are the two new ports in Southeast that are really alluring to cruise ships.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, you can't make yourself Glacier Bay, but, you know, and she was honest in that, and so was the Alaska Tourism Association, or Cruise Ship Association. Mm-hmm. It can't hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of people's feelings mm-hmm. on this. What can it hurt to try?
Right, right.
So,
yeah.
I don't know.
And I think that is interesting because we could offer it and nobody would take.
Right.
And then we're right back to where we are and we've right. had all of this talk.
And the theory is, right, I think you have this down, that mm-hmm. We would make more, supposedly, in sales tax revenue than we would lose.
Let's talk about that. Okay. So I was curious about that because when I did go to the website uh-huh. of the borough's website. And if you click on economic development and you click on through and you'll get all of these documents that were generated by Bill Mandeville to demonstrate or illustrate how, you know, the rationale for this whole argument. So one of the things that... that was assumed in some of Mr. Mandeville's assessment. There was an assumption that all of the passengers that are on that ship at the dock will get off that ship and spend money.
Oh, right.
So
I see what you're saying.
I think that you cannot assume that yeah. even though there's 2,000 people aboard that ship, you know, maybe at the most, 1,500 get off.
Right.
But, I mean, there are always people that are on that cruise ship to do something other than dock. I mean, come aboard.
Right.
You know, I don't feel like going to Haines today. I looked out my window this morning. What a little town. There's nothing happening here.
It's raining.
It's raining.
Yeah.
You know, all of that stuff. So I think that most people in the industry recognize that you're not going to get 100%. Now, we should also say that the McDowell Group was commissioned in 2011 to do a survey of people and what do they spend in Haines.
Mm-hmm.
And so the documents produced by the borough use the number of $254. Apparently that's the average number of dollars that a tourist off a cruise ship spends in Haines. I think an error that could be corrected, we can still correct it, is that the documents generated to support this theory use $254 times the total capacity of the ship, so that we have something like $254,000 in
right.
sales and a huge in volume, I mean, a large amount of sales tax generated from that. So I think that's questionable. But let's go back to an absolute fact, okay?
Okay.
Okay, I don't know if it's absolute, but I was told by Mr. Gaffney again, that when the, I think it's either the Golden Princess, the ship that came as a result of the waiver offer, apparently.
Yes.
I mean, it came free of charge, and that was on May 25th, I think, and so it did not pay moorage. I was told by Mr. Gaffney, and it was also reported by David Sosa at his meeting at the museum the other day, that 1,200 tours were sold. That ship capacity is 3,080 people, right?
Right.
Okay. 3,080 people were passengers. That's the capacity.
That's the capacity.
I don't know how many berths they – I mean, I don't know how many staterooms were actually sold on that ship, but that's the capacity of the ship, okay? So 3,080 passengers, and we sold 1,200 tours. So I think it's like 40% of the people bought tours. That's pretty cool. I mean, I think that's something good to look at. Okay. So now let's talk about how much did they really spend. And we're only talking tours right now. We're not talking about retail shops or bars or anything like that. But we say that, okay, 1,200 people. I think that the average amount of money that a cruise ship all our cruise ship operators, I'd say the average price to them, I'm going to guess, is 70. Now, I did go, just so people know, I did go to the Princess Cruise Lines website, looked up their shore excursions, looked up the entire list of shore excursions available off of the Princess Tour. It's phenomenal. I mean, there's like over 30 or 40 tours. Good job, Haynes.
Well, and some of those are Skagway because you can take
the fast.
There
were only two.
Okay.
That was huge. But anyway, looking at it, it seemed to me like the prices of the tours to the person aboard ship were anywhere from like $50 to $250.
Right.
But remember, the cruise ship takes 40% off the top of that.
I
thought perhaps the average amount of money that the operator receives, I'm saying, is $70. Okay. So we take 1,200 tours and they spend $70. That's $84,000. $84,000 generates $4,600 in sales tax.
Not too shabby.
It's not too shabby. But remember, we lost or we gave away $3,000.
So we
need to replace that because there was a reason we had cruise ship moorage fees. It's because we need to pay for the repair of the dock, the maintenance of the dock, blah, blah, blah. I mean, those costs are still there for us.
Right.
So if we collected, so we had an additional $84,000 in sales that day, and we collected $4,600 in sales tax, let's replenish the $3,000, and that means we're ahead $1,620.
Okay.
Now, let's say we get a cruise ship that comes in and says, "Yes, I will dock for 20 weeks So we're talking at let's say this happens consistently, 1,200 tours for 20 weeks. So that's $32,400 more over the $3,000 times 20 that they would have paid in docking fees. So if it works out that way, yes, I think it's true that there is an increase in sales tax revenue that would exceed the cost of the waivers.
And just to be fair, you're only looking at tours. You're not looking at if
Correct.
People bought stuff
right.
in local stores.
Because that was another thing that was brought up at one of the committee hearings. How are we as a community going to know how much sales tax that we collect was generated specifically by cruise ship
how
tours?
How are we going to track the success of this if it happens?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good question.
Yeah, and unfortunately, Bill said, "Well, we'll get to that," but he's not here anymore.
Unfortunately, yeah.
So somebody's going to get me to that.
I
got to find that answer to that question of how do we track it. But, as he said earlier, you just have to find a starting point, where you're going to start. And then there will always be some mushiness or some kind of, there's obscure things. Like you never know the cost of gasoline, maybe something happened in the community that would cause an increase or decrease in sales tax. And so you don't always know how cruise ship sales tax or, things bought by people off cruise ships, you can't necessarily isolate them.
Right. I mean, we also have to identify that we do, fortunately, with our neighbor Skagway benefit from the ships that go to Skagway, because a lot of people come over. I mean, I don't know how many. Would you say maybe a few hundred each day come over for tours in hands?
Oh, for sure. Well, is it? The capacity of the boat is probably, what, 150?
And it runs several. And we did verify that we do get the sales tax off the tours. So even though they're sold on a ship that docks in Skagway, if someone buys a tour for Haines that day and comes over on the Fast Ferry, right, Haines collects a sales tax, right, on that tour.
Right.
And I think that that's a lot harder to track, and that's not been included in this discussion too
much. Right, I don't think that tour operators necessarily distinguish.
Probably not. But I thought it was an interesting, you know, benefit from this.
Right.
So, right. Anyways. Okay. All right.
Okay, so I guess we've talked a lot about the ideas that
have come forward on this thing,
and I don't know if we want to spend any more time, but I would certainly like to encourage people to go to the meeting tonight and express your opinion. And you can call in now at 766-2020.
Extension 1,
right?
Yeah.
And voice your opinion on this. It has been touted or presented as a marketing
tool.
Mm-hmm. I personally don't see it necessarily as a marketing tool because it has such an impact on the rest of the budget. I mean, I'm pretty clear that there was a reason we charged for mortgage.
Right.
I mean, it's not just a frivolous thing like, oh, let's charge for mortgage. I mean, there are real costs associated with owning that infrastructure, and somebody has to pay for it. And I'd like to know where that money's coming from. And so if we don't charge mortgage, we have to make up that money somewhere else. And so this is a plan, or it's an idea, a proposal, and, you know, it very well may work. I'm not going to say that it won't. And again, Sean Gaffney would say the only risk we're taking is that they would have come anyway.
Right.
But
so, and I did talk to George. Yes, he's the chair of the Commerce Committee, who will be running tonight's meeting, okay, with the TAB, the Tourism Advisory Board. Mm-hmm. And even though Bill Mandeville has resigned and he had all this information, George says it's going to go forward. The resignation is not going to I mean, George has expressed a lot of support for this anyways, mm-hmm, has of members of the Commerce, mm-hmm, Committee. So he doesn't think that this is going to be held up for any reason because, mm-hmm, of Mr. Mandeville's, mm-hmm, departure. So, mm-hmm, I guess we'll see what happens tonight at the meeting.
Right. Okay. And I think that, like I say, that, well, go to the meeting, express yourself. And I hope that we have been able to provide some information here that is valuable to people in forming their position on whether or not they want to support it. Okay.
Gotcha. Quick break.
Throughout the years, six of them on and off, Talk Around Town has featured selections from Choosing Civility, the 25 Rules of Considerate Conduct, and that's written by P.M. Forney, the co-founder of the John Hopkins Civility Project. So we've done that because we really believe that public discourse depends on civil engagement. Problems are resolved in a culture of civility. It's important that resolution of public issues is approached with civility. I don't get enough of that word. Civility is a choice. It's something that you learn and then you choose to practice it. Margaret,
yes,
you are perfectly positioned to answer this question because you've attended public meetings in the course of your work, many of them.
Yes.
So imagine a civility scale. How do we rate as a community?
Oh, that's a wow. That's an interesting. I wasn't prepared for that question.
No.
If I take all the public meetings, you mean in the whole in the last 3 years I've attended?
Yeah.
There are some meetings that have really blown the average. I will tell you that on the low end.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would have to give the average a 6. knowing that there are some meetings.
Really? I thought you'd go lower than that.
I may be generous because
ten
I don't.
Everything is civil. Most,
everything is great and civil. I mean, I can point to a few. I can tell you a few of the highlights, a few of the ones that I thought went really well and a few of the ones that didn't.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Do you want to?
Sure.
Well, I'm the outgoing news director, so I have a little more leeway, don't I?
You not only have leeway, but you can also tell us that your position have anything to do with attending public meetings?
You want to know that?
Yes, I do.
Yes. I really, really enjoy public meetings. I will say that. But there are some days when you have to attend as many as I do that it gets frustrating. And I've had people joke. I mean, okay, I might as well be honest. I have 2 weeks left.
You might as well be.
There are times people joke, you're texting during a meeting sometimes. They see me texting during a meeting. You know who I'm texting with?
Probably the other reporter.
Yes. And sometimes reporters have an ego. I think sometimes you need an ego. You need a certain amount of confidence to do the job you do. Do we make fun of people in our texts? I won't say we make fun of people, but we make fun of the process sometimes because it gets frustrating. You see an ordinance or an idea over the course of several months, and sometimes you're just like, what? Why is this so hard? Why is this so difficult? And I can think of a few meetings. I mean, there were a few meetings.
Now, you're talking about process, but we want to blend that in with civility,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, civility. I mean, one of the worst was the most recent one last week or this week was it the Government Affairs and Services Committee?
That was a committee.
That was, in my opinion, that was a hard one to sit through.
Because of the way people...
I mean, there was, Mike Dinker gave a presentation. He thought that borough code doesn't reconcile with borough policy on about how the public can get something on an assembly agenda. And he was very technical. You know, he's taking a constitutional law class. I've talked to him a lot about it because I like legal things. I'm a paralegal. And, you know, he can get very technical, whatnot. And he was maybe going on a little long with his explanations. But nobody cut him off. You know, the chairman of the committee didn't say, hey, Mike, can we, like, condense this or wrap this up a little bit in a way that you could manage a meeting? You know, and I think that's one of the things I've learned as a journalist is it's really interesting to watch how various people manage meetings.
Well, I think it is wait, don't want to branch off too far here because you do want to tell your story. And I do want to make sure that we don't get too.
Right.
Okay. So being prepared for meetings and having the chair know what the issue is, having the chair know what the parameters are, is number one.
Right.
And I think that things fall apart really fast when the chair is not in control.
Right.
So go ahead.
So that meeting, you know, Mike went on and he gave a very lengthy presentation that obviously people were fidgeting and getting a little lost in the weeds of what he was saying. And I didn't really, you know, and he wasn't cut off. That was the thing. He was let go.
So where was the lack of civility?
The lack of the civility was in the response. And a couple of committee members just derided him, just said, this is, that was an awful presentation. That I can't even use the word that one committee member said on public radio. I can't. I can't say the word that he called the presentation. And it was sad. It was sad to see that, A, that meeting wasn't managed to the point of respecting people's time by maybe cutting Mike off, but then also cutting it off and not having the response that there was to that. So,
you know, I want to bring to this discussion my own personal experience because I was an assembly member for many, many years. And I'll never forget my brother, who hardly ever goes to public meetings, went to a meeting, and the next day or something, I called him up and I asked him, so did I sound okay? You know, and he said, well, you know, Deborah, you got to really stop rolling your eyes. Oh my God, I didn't realize that I was rolling my eyes. You know, so a lot of times when you're not really aware of how you register your response.
That's difficult.
And and so that taught me, or I began a new approach, you know, to managing myself in a public meeting so that I gave the person that was speaking the opportunity to, I tried my best, to give a person who was speaking to me an opportunity to finish what they were saying without me interfering with their thought processes by making faces. I went to a public meeting less than a month ago, and I started, it was a committee meeting, and I waited for my turn to speak. I was called on, I got up to speak, and as soon as I started to speak, it was clear that the member of the committee, an assembly member, was either questioning or not in support of or didn't understand what I was talking about, leaned over to another assembly member and started talking to them mm-hmm. while I was talking. And, you know, I had the wherewithal to say, excuse me, am I wrong in what I'm saying? And I was then met with a look that said, don't interrupt me. Mm-hmm. But it's really important for all of us to recognize that, you know, listening to people and giving them an opportunity to speak is a step number one, listening.
Yeah.
And to let them do that. But you're also right that we have to learn how to manage each other civilly
right.
also.
And one of the things you just said was all of us. Mm-hmm. So have there been times I've been at public meetings where I cringe at what someone in the public has said to the assembly mm-hmm. or attacked
oh,
a
yeah.
member? Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, the government officials are people too. They are held to a higher standard, and I believe they should be held to a higher standard. Mm-hmm. Their feet are held to a fire every day. Mm-hmm. And that's the role of a government mm-hmm. official. I'm mm-hmm. not saying I'd want to be one. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying they're, mm-hmm. they have an easy job. Mm-hmm. But that is part of the job, mm-hmm. unfortunately mm-hmm. or fortunately. Mm-hmm. And it's part of my job and mm-hmm. the newspaper's job to hold their feet to the fire. And I can understand that that gets stressful and that gets hard on you sometimes. Mm-hmm. However, you know, and that's where I think sometimes the public needs to remember that the public officials are people, too. And reporting in a small town is exhausting because of that exact reason. Mm-hmm. I can't separate the public official as a public official who I don't see in the grocery store or somewhere else in mm-hmm. town. It's a whole lot easier being a reporter in a big town where mm-hmm. I can separate it. Mm-hmm. But in this town, we can. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think a lot of times it becomes easy. It's less civil. Mm-hmm. But you have to be more civil in a small town because you have to live with these people on both sides of an issue and mm-hmm. on both sides of a disagreement. So.
I'd like to talk a little bit about what I perceive as the most egregious part of or how we get in, trap ourselves in uncivil behavior. And that is the familiarity, as you're talking about, that we have with each other sometimes allows us to pull into our what we're hearing, the words that we're hearing coming out of somebody's mouth, have a constant judgment going on in the back of our heads because, well, that isn't what you said the other day. Oh, yeah. You know, you mm-hmm. hear a person's words and you can judge them because you see that they're not necessarily behaving consistently or they're, you know, something about them
yeah.
that that invalidates what they're saying in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that constant judgment of people going on. And we then fall into being personal.
Yeah.
And now the David Sosa and Julie Causey, our clerk and manager, just conducted a 3-hour training session for board members, commission members, and assembly members.
And you went to that, right?
I went to that. I've been going to every single public meeting. That's okay. But I mean, I was interested in how they. Well, truthfully, I was interested in whether or not they were going to be using actual stories and incidences and occurrences and use them as fodder for teaching.
Right.
They did not.
Okay.
They stayed with the theoretic.
Okay.
But, you know, there was certainly this issue about separating the personal from the topic is a very, very critical aspect of public discourse. And it was brought up by Annie Boyce at
the
manager's, I call it the manager's meeting at the museum. And that was, you know, she talked about the eye rolling. She talked about the sighing. She talked about the slouching in the chair. She talked about the experience that many people in the audience oftentimes have when they come forward. And that's a hard lesson to learn, that when you are doing the public's business, it's hard sometimes to recall how much effort really takes for some people to come forward.
Right.
People really don't want to come forward and speak publicly. I mean,
right.
some people, they step up to the microphone and they get a little lump in their throat and they hyperventilate, you
right.
know, and you think, oh my God, they're scared, you
right.
know, they don't
right.
feel comfortable here. And so, you know, that you have to acknowledge that it's hard for people. So when they're met with all of this, you know, nonverbal communication, it's really hard for them to feel comfortable about what they're doing.
Can I take that another step for? Has someone, you've lived in this community your whole life, right?
Yes, I have.
I've lived here three. So as someone who came in fairly recently, I'll tell you something else that I think this falls within civility. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of part of that town hall meeting too. A lot of people don't use Facebook in this town. Mm-hmm. Annie was talking about how a lot of people live here because we don't do things the way things are done mm-hmm. elsewhere. Mm-hmm. However, when new people come into our community, it is difficult sometimes to recognize that they may have new ideas,
mm-hmm.
dare I say fresh ideas, or ideas of how things were done where they came from mm-hmm. that maybe could be beneficial to hear about. And I think part of the civility comes from recognizing that while someone may have lived here a long time and they live here because it's not down south, it's not New York City, mm-hmm, it's not mm-hmm. Seattle, it's we're Haines, we can do things differently, but that also means listening to new ideas sometimes mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. I think new ways of new approaches and new ways, and I see sometimes public officials struggling with that, new public officials that come in from mm-hmm, out of town
mm-hmm.
you know, forwarding new ideas mm-hmm. they get shot down fast and quick and mm-hmm. and a lot I'm not saying that's okay, that's fine mm-hmm. that's fine, but to also recognize the civility and just listening to ideas.
Absolutely. And we're going to run down the first six there are 25 rules of civility, but I want to comment on that because we as a community have in the last 4 or 5 years taken the very conscious choice to hire people from outside this community mm-hmm. who have credentials in what we think we want them to have.
Mm-hmm.
And they do come forward and they do bring new ideas and different ways of doing things. And I think that I observe that sometimes we give them a really rocky road to walk down.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really do appreciate that. I finally come to terms with the fact that I probably need to get a Facebook page.
Oh.
Actually, I need a Facebook account.
I can show you how to do it, Deborah.
Okay, so
go ahead.
The first rule of civility is pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What does that really mean? It means to let go of whatever it is you've got going in your mind and pay attention to what the other person is talking about. Acknowledging others is important. And I think that's what we don't do enough of in our public discourse. So many, you can see people just waiting for somebody to be shut up so that they can talk about what they want to talk about.
Right.
So, you know, it's sitting back, relaxing, being receptive to the fact that there's somebody else standing there talking or they have the floor, so to speak. The third, think the best. That's the hardest for me.
Oh, yeah. That's very true.
Yeah, we were just talking about that because all of us know each other so well that we attribute motivations and we attribute intention and we attribute all kinds of stuff to why somebody is saying or doing what they're doing.
Right.
And we don't think the best of them. And I'm surprised that Mr. Fournier puts listen as the fourth. I would have put that first, but I didn't write the book.
Okay.
So, and I didn't think about it as much as he did. So
pay attention also means listening. So
I thought so too, a little bit,
kinda,
you know? Yeah. So listen is a, and that's hard.
Oh, yeah.
Listening is not hearing.
Active listening. Yes. Yeah, you're right. Listening
it's not hearing. Yeah. It's understanding, moving to understand what the person is saying. Five, be inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, that's pretty important, I think, especially for public discourse. And number six is speak kindly. Now, I don't know if you want to go on and on and on, but
so this basically means we should have kindergartners do our public discourse because this is what everybody learns when they're basic and young and learning to live and work with each other.
Is that true?
I believe so.
Is that being taught?
That's being.
Am I being old by thinking that the new generation is like wildly different from me? I don't know.
I don't have kids.
I don't know either. But I think that one of the things I just want to tell you that I recently gobbled up a book called So You've Been Publicly Shamed.
Okay.
It's a fascinating book, and it talks about how the internet and Twitter and all of these instant messaging and social media things people are just piling on people and ruining their lives by publicly shaming them for incidences and things that they do. And we have to be careful. I mean, the internet's a private place. You know, you can beat up on somebody all you want to, and apparently nobody knows who you are or whatever. But here in your own community, in a in public, it's probably a better idea to show the best of yourself when you're talking with another human being and listening to another human being.
Well, I've always appreciated learning these from you during Talk Around Town, Deborah. So thanks for sharing.
We'll pick up on again when we come back. And I think that's time for music.
That's time for music. And
I do want to thank that we did get a call, but we didn't have time or something.
Yeah, we did.
Okay, thank you.
Well, it's been fun.
Margaret, it has been very, not only fun, but enlightening and generating, energetic.
I'm going to miss you.
Yeah, I'm going to miss you too. So thanks for joining us today and exploring a bit more deeply some aspects of community life here in Haines. Talk Around Town will experience a hiatus until KHNS gets a new news director on staff. We expect that will be like in a month or 6 weeks at the most, I suppose.
Something like that.
All right. So thanks and goodbye to you, Margaret. Your professionalism and your good nature will certainly be missed.
Oh, thank you, Deborah.
Yeah. This is KHNS, Haines, Skagway, and Klukwan.